Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for May the 7th, 2018. This is David Corey along with my co-host, Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Hey there, David, and good evening, everyone. Welcome to our listeners this evening. Our special guest on tonight's show is Brian Meyer of the Veterans Community Project, located in Kansas City, Missouri. I want to remind everyone that this is a call-in show that welcomes your views, comments, and questions. So you can call us at any time during the show at 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. So if there's something on your mind regarding what's going on with the show, you might want to ask Brian a question, please give us a call. Again, that number is 1-888-627-6008. Back to you, David.
Thanks, Richard. Now I'd like to introduce our special guest tonight. Brian Meyer is the Chief Legal Officer of the Veterans Community Project of Kansas City, Missouri. He is a former Marine Corps helicopter crew chief, and during his time in the Marines, he was attached to Marine Medium Helicopter Squad 355. He deployed to Iraq in March of 2003, participated in Operation Shining Express, which was support of rescue efforts of the U.S. Embassy during the Second Liberian Civil War, and he deployed again to Iraq in August of 2004. During these deployments, his unit provided assault support and casualty evacuation. After his service in the Marine Corps, Brian moved back home to Kansas City, where he attended the University of Missouri, Kansas City, earning a master's degree in public administration and a law degree. Brian worked as a practicing attorney at a Kansas City law firm until leaving to co-found the Veterans Community Project. Brian was our guest on our September 18th, 2017 show, and he's back tonight with us to bring us up to date with the work done by his organization to help veterans. So let's welcome Brian Meyer back to the Veterans News Hour. How are you, Brian?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing super. Thanks very much. We have lots to talk about tonight, but let's begin with you telling us about the history, purpose, and the goals of the organization.
Absolutely. So Veterans Community Project was founded by myself and other veterans here in the Kansas City area. Myself and a few other individuals, we were working with the homeless population in various capacities. And at a certain point in time, we kind of thought that the homeless veteran population wasn't receiving, in our opinion, adequate services. So we decided to start our own thing. And basically what we did is we looked at existing models for homeless services and thought that there was an opportunity to implement tiny houses as transitional housing for homeless veterans, as well as offering on-site wraparound social services. So we founded the organization in 2016, and as of now, we have 13 of the eventual 50 houses built. And we are, actively housing and providing those services.
Well, that's super. I know you were a guest on our show September 18th of last year, and as I recall, you were just getting close to opening the Veteran Village. And how is that going? Can you describe for our listeners what that Veterans Village is like?
Yeah. So actually, when we last talked, I thought we were a little bit closer than we were. We got set back by some infrastructure issues. And what I mean by that is the houses we're building, they're all put on concrete foundations, connected to city utilities, and meet every code that any new construction has to meet. So we basically had to run the groundwork for a subdivision is the best way that I can put it. We had a few setbacks along the way, partly because nobody's really been able to do this before inside a major city limit, so it's a lot of kind of designing the playbook as we go. But we moved our first veterans in on January 29th of 2018. Since that time, we've actually transitioned five veterans from homelessness into permanent housing, and then we've replaced those houses, those vacancies, with other veterans in need.
Well, that's super. Tell our listeners where exactly the Veterans Village is located, and if you could describe more for us what it looks like. You said it's like a little community, basically. What do the homes look like? What does the area look like? Those sorts of things.
Yeah, so we are located well within inside city limits here in Kansas City, Missouri. We're 25 feet from a major bus stop. We purchased 5 acres, and on that 5 acres, we'll eventually have 50 houses and a 5,000-square-foot community center. So as of right now, we have the first 13 done, and those 13 houses, well, 9 of them are 240 square feet. The other 4 are 320 square feet. Again, they look much like any other traditional house would look like, except shrunken down. On the inside, they have a bed, a bathroom, a kitchen, a desk, TV, and then there's a little bit of an open space, and we allow each resident to kind of customize that open space however they want to.
I see. Now, I understand that listeners can go to your website. What's your website? Because they can see actual photographs of these tiny homes. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. You can see photographs, and there's even a place on the website that you can take kind of a virtual tour. And that website is veteranscommunityproject.org. You can just Google Veterans Community Project, and we come right up.
Very good. Now, Brian, what does a veteran need to do to qualify to live in the Veterans Village there in Kansas City?
So our approach to qualifying to live in the village is anybody who's ever taken an oath to serve their country. Now, that means you could have served one day or 100 years. We also include National Guard members, which we feel is an overlooked population. We don't discriminate based on discharge status, disability status, any of that. To us, taking the oath to serve your country is an act that not a lot of people do, and for that we feel you qualify for our services. One great example we've had already was a gentleman who has had a disability claim pending with the VA for the better part of 10 years. He had a dishonorable discharge and no disability rating. Well, in the time that he was living here, that pending matter actually went through on both ends, and he was given a honorable discharge and 100% disability rating. So for 10 years, that gentleman went not receiving services that, he was otherwise entitled to, but because of our kind of openness to serving people, we were able to house him.
Well, that's super. Now, Brian, tell us more about, you said you'll have a 5,000-square-foot community center. Tell us about that, what it will look like or what it looks like, and what services will be provided to the veterans that live in the Veterans Village.
Yeah, so right now a lot of our social services are coordinated from kind of a on-site mobile unit. But the eventual community center, which we're going to start breaking ground on pretty soon, is really at the heart and core of what we're doing, because when it comes down to it, we're a social services provider. That building will have a training kitchen, a laundry room, veterinary clinic, dog wash, clean room, medical exam room, dental exam room, barber shop. It's where the case managers will office out of, and it'll have a large fellowship hall. So our idea is to bring all the services directly on site.
Wow, that's super. Yeah, because you've probably found, as we've found, with many veterans that are homeless, they have they don't have vehicles. They may not even have a bicycle. So having the convenience there, it sounds like a great plan. Can you tell us more about the services that you're finding that veterans that you're serving need? What kind of services are being offered to specifically?
Well, the most important service and the one that we're really focused on right now is just general case management, you know, kind of typical social work. And we have actually three individuals who are case managers and work with the 13 veterans every day. It's a pretty good ratio. When it comes to all the other services, one of our big things is complement, not compete. So we open our doors and we partner with a lot of existing community organizations to provide all sorts of additional services, anything from resume writing to general health and welfare services, as well as medical and dental.
Oh, that's super. Yeah, that's a great idea. Now, Brian, I understand that while you have the Veterans Village now in Kansas City, you have plans to spread those projects, the concepts, to homeless veterans in other cities and communities. Can you tell us more about those plans?
Yeah, you know, and candidly, I can absolutely say when myself and the other guys kind of undertook this endeavor, we really thought that we were just trying to do something here in Kansas City. We're all from Kansas City, and we wanted to try to take care of our local community. However, the response has been so great that we realized we should really take this concept into other areas. So we began to work on a project in Nashville, a project in St. Louis, and we have one or two more cities identified that we're actively working on kind of branching out to.
I see. Can you tell us more about when you mentioned a few moments ago, I think it's a great idea of you know, working with other groups as opposed to trying to do what other groups are doing and duplication of effort. Can you tell us more for the benefit of there's so many veteran organizations out there, how you're finding that experience and locating other veteran groups or if they're coming to you, they're hearing about what you're, the great work you're doing. How is that happening?
So it's a little bit of both. You know, we target some other organizations and ask them to partner with us, but we've also received a great level of response from other organizations that offer services. One of the things about our organization is we're not grant funded, meaning that all of our we're able to do what we do as a nonprofit based off of individual donations, corporate donations, foundation donations. A lot of grants wouldn't enable us to serve the population I previously described. But more importantly, for other organizations that are based, that are grant-based, you know, they're kind of numbers-oriented. You know, they have to serve certain populations. So what we do is we say, you know, we have these great individuals to come offer your services to, and, you know, we really have people lining up to come in and do it. So it's the response from the community has really been great.
I see. Now, for veterans and veteran groups out there across the country who may be interested in following your example, maybe learning from your experience and working with you in some way, what kind of advice or insight would you offer them?
I would say, you know, the kind of key things are, one, engage your community, meaning our first meetings were with our mayor and city council, and, you know, we kind of laid out what we wanted to do and really needed their support. Two, I would say, you know, evaluate your population, evaluate the need. And for us, it's really, really paramount that we are located inside major city limits, because all those partner organizations I was talking about, all those existing services, they exist inside major cities. So, you know, it'd be really, really difficult for any one organization to do it all themselves. They should really look at opportunities to partner with other ones.
I see. So other ones that most likely would need to be relatively close geographically, sounds like what you're saying.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, one of our big things when we evaluate other places and look at other properties is really simple. How long does it take to get to a bus stop, and then how long does it take to get from the bus to the VA hospital? You know, that's just an easy thing for us to look at.
Right. Very practical thing that you wouldn't want to overlook. And I think, if I recall, when you were on our show last September, you mentioned a successful project of your organization regarding free bus transportation. Is that correct? Is my memory correct on that?
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. It's a program we're pretty proud of. So in addition to the village and the community center we're building, very nearby, we also have an outreach center. And that outreach center is open for any veteran to come through and receive any number of services. Our most popular program is we created a bus pass program whereby any veteran can come to us and receive a bus pass that allows them to ride the bus for free permanently. We launched that program in May of 2017. So it's coming, it's just over, right about 1 year old now. And in that 1 year, we've issued over 4,000 free passes. And off those 4,000 free passes, there have been over 1 million free rides given.
Wow. And you said these are free passes that are good indefinitely?
Well, they're good indefinitely, generally speaking. The particular card itself expires in 2021. However, that time, the individual would just come back to us and get a new pass. And that's another program that we're taking to other markets as well. So,
I see. All right. Well, very good. Any other projects that you'd like to share with us, either ongoing projects or things that you'd like to shoot for in the future?
Well, I just encourage anybody who's interested to reach out to us through our website, again, veteranscommunityproject.org. If you're interested in supporting us, you know, there's, of course, as a nonprofit, we always love donations, but we have some programs going. We have a buy a brick program where you can buy a brick to commemorate a loved one or just support us. And we're installing those bricks here at our outreach center. But really, or just, you know, kind of spread awareness about what we're doing because we are still relatively young.
Very good. Very good. And one more time for, Brian, for our listeners, if you could give our listeners your website and also if there's a phone number they can call, any other way that you'd like them to use to contact your organization, either to provide support to help your organization or just to find out more information.
Yeah, again, our website is www.veteranscommunityproject.org, or you can always just throw Veterans Community Project into Google or Tiny Houses for Homeless Vets, and we generally pop right up. Or you can call our offices. We're here Monday through Friday at 816-599-6503. Another great way to kind of keep up on what we're doing is social media.
Very good. Facebook, I would assume, and other ones?
Yep. Facebook, okay. Twitter, Instagram, I believe.
And they can subscribe to a newsletter on your website, as I recall, as well.
Yes,
correct?
They can. Yes. Yeah. We try to get out a quarterly newsletter to keep everybody updated and kind of let them know where we're expanding to and different projects we're working on.
Very good. Well, Brian, thank you so much. Go ahead, Richard.
Hey, David. Excuse me, David. Brian, before you go, I got a couple of questions.
Absolutely.
I know, obviously, you are there and working pretty hard, and you talked about some other guys. How large is your staff?
We are now up to 11. So myself, the other co-founders, we have 4 people on our case management team. We have a development director and 2 operations guys. Is that 11? I believe that's 11. I'm standing in the office right now, and I'm trying to look around at the cubicles and remember everybody.
And they're all salaried, or are they volunteer? Or?
Oh no, those are just the salaried people. We also have numerous volunteers that are here every single day. We generally use volunteers to engage a lot of our walk-in clientele because we see anywhere from 15 to 25 veterans a day. So at any given time, there's, you know, 3, 4, 5 volunteers around the office chipping in as well.
No, I'm not.
Well, Brian, I know Richard Hurley has his eyes set on starting a veterans program here in Florida, model after some other organizations, but I'm sure he probably, don't let me speak for you, Richard, why don't you go ahead and maybe share your thoughts. And
I have a couple of clients right in Houston, a place called Camp Hope, which is part of, it's a corporation, PTSD of America or something like that. Anyway, Camp Hope is a, basically it's a spiritual based, group that takes care of veterans suffering from PTSD primarily. Many of them had bouts with potential suicide, jail. In fact, I've got a client right now who I just got into Camp Hope courtesy of the camp, but I also had to convince the judge, instead of putting him in jail on a intent to distribute heroin, instead of doing that, he's going to be able to go to Camp Hope. And a little backdrop on his heroin thing is very sad. He worked in the federal prison system for 16 years, very successful guy. He had a knee injury as courtesy of being in the service, and he had an operation with the VA, and they put him on opioids. And his opioid ended up becoming an addiction. They then stopped giving him opioids, and then he turned to heroin, and his whole life has just gone essentially down the tube. But so this Camp Hope, it's kind of a spiritual based program based on like the 12-step program. And so that's what I'm trying to. I'm going to do something like that in Florida with David's help and a lot of other people. But it's different than what you're doing, but I'm sure I'm going to be probably reaching out to you and kind of picking your brains on some ideas in terms of trying to start it up.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're never shy about sharing, because what we're doing isn't, you know, I've seen some just really incredible, you know, variations on it, and I think it's all pretty exciting, but mostly to see, you know, individuals like yourself and, you know, a whole lot of others kind of saying that, you know, there's this issue out here and it's not being addressed, and we're not going to wait for somebody else to fix it. You know, we're really going to step up and try to do something ourselves. So I think it's all great.
Yeah. Now, go ahead, Richard.
I was curious, Kansas City, You have bus service in Florida. We have a bus service too. But you know, one of the things that we lack in Florida is any sort of mass transit, a rail system specifically. And how about Kansas City?
We just have a recently got a light rail system. I wish I knew off the top of my head, but it's just about 2 miles long, and it really only runs down the downtown corridor. Our transit system is really just bus heavy, and, you know, a credit to our local transportation authority, who, when we brought them this idea, they really, you know, got on board with it and saw the value in it.
Yeah, well,
I think it's great what you're doing, Brian, and one thing that I think is particularly interesting is your focus in the Veterans Village on the tiny homes concept, where each veteran gets his or her own small home, but in a very tight-knit community, served with a common community center, which, as you described earlier on our show, has all sorts of great things, kind of a one-stop shopping. I'm familiar with some homeless shelters and programs in the Tampa Bay area here in Florida, and from ones that are just kind of what I would consider kind of run-of-the-mill homeless shelters, which are kind of rough places, to one that I would consider kind of a five-star homeless shelter, but it has a special section for veterans, but they're more like apartments where veterans would share rooms. They wouldn't have their own room. They'd have much less privacy, and then talking to some of the veterans there. It's kind of a mixed blessing and the problems with that, because you know, the veterans can thrive on the support of other veterans, and yet some of the problems that these veterans have, whether it's alcohol or substance abuse, they're working through those issues. They're working through other psychological issues that can create a lot of problems when they're having to share space with other veterans, roommates, et cetera. So, yeah, I'll be interested to hear your thoughts on. It sounds like your project there, the Veterans Village, is trying to do the best of both worlds. In other words, the veterans can get their privacy in an individual home, and yet they've got the common community center right there on the property. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think you hit a lot. You really hit on a lot of the key points. You know, the tiny home model does give each individual that own sense of space, that own sense of pride of surrounding, security, sense of belonging, as well as, you know, the houses are only, you know, 15, 20 feet apart. So you're really living with a lot of other people with shared experiences, not only from the homeless perspective, but from the veteran perspective. So you have a built-in peer support network. And then you take that a step further when you have your case managers right there on site. It's not a case manager that's just checking in every now and then. That's a case manager that can, you know, look out and see you come out your door in the morning. But yeah, I mean, that really was a lot of what we were going for, is we did realize that group living situations can be detrimental to people suffering with social anxiety disorders, PTSD, all those things. So that's one of the things that drove us towards, you know, tiny homes. And we just feel that, you know, a tiny home that owns space is a great classroom to really reteach somebody how to live independently again. You know, how to just simple stuff from cleaning up to cooking fresh food and storing fresh food. It's for us kind of, like you said, meshes the both of some best practices.
Right. Well, that's super. And we appreciate you being on our show. We hope you'll be back again in the future to keep us updated and share your great insights. We'd like to thank you for all the great work you're doing for veterans. And again, thank you for being on our show. Hope you'll be back sometime soon. So any parting thoughts, Brian?
Well, the only thing I would say is this. I always want people to know that it's you can qualify for a program, like I said earlier, but what I failed to say is to stay in, to stay engaged. You know, we require work. We require active participation. So it's not, you know, once people get in, we really push them to do things and turn themselves around. And
well, that's great.
That's
an important part of it. Well, very good. Thanks, Brian. Thanks for being on our show.
Thanks
for
Brian.
Sharing your insights. And we wish you continued success, you and your organization.
All right. Well, thank you. And thank you for all the work that you both are doing. I appreciate you having me back on.
Thank you. Thanks again. Good night. Well, Richard, that was interesting. It sounds like the Veterans Community Project is doing great work. Again, for our listeners, check out their website, which is veteranscommunityproject.org. veteranscommunityproject.org. So, Richard,
David,
before we get
into anything else, what Brian's doing is terrific stuff. And, you know, there are people all over the country who are doing things like Brian. And we've had them on our show, you know, the group up in New Jersey, Rebecca Winkler and her foundation in the panhandle of Florida. You know, these people are just tremendous people. And I don't know if the civilian population really understands to the extent that these people are going to help veterans, because, you know, they're doing this because the VA is not helping the veteran. You know, they're such a smokescreen, mirrors and smokescreens when it comes to the VA, and they're simply not doing the work that they're supposed to be doing. And thank goodness we've got these wonderful people with empathy, unlike the VA, who are out there taking care of our vets and you know, treating our vets with some dignity so that they can get some self-respect again. And, you know, we deal with vets all day long. And it's, you know, what they've been through and the pain they've been through, both physically and mentally, is so difficult. And we're not, you know, from the mid-20-year-old vet all the way up to the vet who's in his 70s and 80s. So, you know, I want to commend Brian. I want to commend all those other civilians that are out there, or veterans who are out there doing work to help veterans, because they can't be forgotten. And it's important that we recognize them. And, you know, people around the country, if you see people like Brian in the organization, give them a hand, you know, throw them a few bucks, volunteer, do something to help them help the veterans. Because we're all in this thing together. Remember, those veterans one day, you know, it wasn't too long ago, those veterans are out there fighting for this country so that we can all enjoy the benefits that we have here in this country. And, you know, our government's forgotten about them, but we shouldn't. So give them a helping hand. Anyway, I know David, you've got something else to talk about with Mr.
Well,
Wells.
Well, before I turn to that, I want to thank you. Thank you for those insights, and you're absolutely right. There are so many private organizations, and we've lined up to have some more representatives organizations in the upcoming shows. In a couple weeks, we're going to have a representative of a private veterans group. It's called Green Vets. They're based in Southeast Florida, but they're connected with some nationwide groups, and their goal, this was founded by some veterans, and their idea is to get veterans back into civilian life, working together, but also working on projects. You know, part of the green environmental jobs, and so one of their representatives will be on our show in a couple weeks. And we're also planning to have other representatives in the next few months from other organizations. So I urge our listeners to stay tuned, because it's quite inspiring what Brian Meyer and the other co-founders of the Veterans Community Project in Kansas City. You know, he's being very humble, but when you listen to his story, you know, he served two tours over in Iraq, starting with the very first invasion in 2003. He got out of the service after those tours, continued his education, including a law degree, became an attorney, and now he moved from the practice of law to working with this organization as a co-founder. And in just a few years, they've done a lot, because they've recognized the problem of homelessness among the veteran population. They've recognized, as other veteran groups have done, the difficulties facing veterans who are leaving active duty, particularly those that had wartime service, as so many have in the last 15 years, the difficulties that they face, and some of them face, many of them face, in transitioning back to civilian life, because they've totally lost the connection, you know, that they had their military units, that support, et cetera. Now they're struggling often with post-traumatic stress and other problems of transitioning to civilian life. Some become homeless, and some get into legal problems. Richard, as you mentioned before, how one veteran ended up, you know, with a substance abuse problem. And we've heard that story many times, you know, and people we've talked to from around the country, how it can happen. And that a person's life can quickly unravel, again, to legal problems. They become homeless. So an organization like the Veterans Community Project is doing a great thing. They're certainly filling a gap that the VA is not able to totally serve. So I applaud their efforts. And again, I'd invite our listeners to check out their website, veteranscommunityproject.org. If you're able to support them in any way, including financially, you can do that through their website. All right, let's move on to our next segment of the show tonight. I want to highlight some very important news affecting Vietnam veterans. And this report that I'm going to provide you comes from the Facebook page of an organization called Military Veterans Advocacy, whose executive director, John Wells, a retired Navy commander and now a lawyer who advocates for veterans, has been on our show a couple times the past year. John is a real pro and expert and has done a tremendous amount of work advocating for veterans on Capitol Hill in Washington. He's met with key members of Congress, and he's another amazing example of the difference that one person can make. Well, John has posted this report on Military Veterans Advocacy Facebook page a couple days ago, and I'd like to quote from his report from Capitol Hill. Quote, this has probably been the most successful week in the history of military veterans advocacy. We've been working with the House Veterans Affairs Committee on H.R. 299, the Blue Water Navy Vietnam Veterans Act, since the last markup session failed in November. Dr. Phil Rowe, the committee chairman, has told me, and it's referring to John Wells, in March that he wanted this bill to be signed before Memorial Day, which is just a few weeks away. Memorial Day is May 28th. So at that time, John Wells thought that was very optimistic, but it looks like that goal may be achieved. Military Veterans Advocacy is also working with the Senate Veterans Committee so that it can have quick passage through both houses of Congress. According to John Wells, here's the schedule of events. The markup hearing is scheduled for tomorrow, Tuesday, May 8th, at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. It will be live streamed on the House Veterans Affairs Committee website, which is veterans.house.gov. There should be a House floor vote. The House of Representatives probably sometime next week, and that should be covered on C-SPAN if you're able to access that. And then hopefully that will pass, and then it goes to the Senate. Hopefully it'll pass there, and then on to President Trump for signature. Now, this is a very important law because the Blue Water Navy veterans have been fighting for years to be covered under the Agent Orange presumptions that apply to those that have had boots on the ground, so to speak, in Vietnam. And this is an issue that they've been fighting for a long, long time. According to John Wells, and I'll quote, regarding those Navy veterans who may be covered by this bill, assuming it becomes law, the bottom line is if you do not have your claim filed, file it immediately. Remember, it reverts back to the date of filing, meaning the effective date. If you have had a claim denied and did not keep it alive through the appeal system, then stay tuned. As currently written, the bill will allow for retroactivity, but until it becomes law, John Wells says he would not try to reopen the claim until the law is passed. The bill may be changed before adoption. He thinks that's unlikely, but it is possible. So according to John Wells, you may ask, what happens after the bill becomes law or the court orders the VA to extend the presumption of exposure? As John Wells says, nothing happens automatically. Don't expect a check just to show up in a month or two. If your claim is still not active, if you're in the so-called Blue Water Navy Vietnam, you may have to file to reopen it. If it is somewhere already in the appellate backlog, you may have to wait until it comes up for a hearing if you've asked for a hearing. The Military Veterans Advocacy said they will ask the VA to set up some sort of accelerated review procedure once the bill is passed. John Wells has also noted in his report that although his organization has cautioned people to avoid the new Rapid Appeals Modernization Program, or RAMP, his point is that once this bill is passed, assuming it is passed, and if you are in the appellate stage, he opines that the RAMP might become a good option for you. In order to ensure your appeal is granted under RAMP, you need to consider submitting the following information. First, a deck log showing the ship was in a harbor or on the territorial seas. You may be asking yourself, what's going to be covered under the territorial seas of this law? Well, go to Military Veterans Advocacy Facebook page. Go to Facebook, type in Military Veterans Advocacy, and John Wells has provided John was a commander in the Navy. He's provided a chart showing the territorial seas, and you can, print that out on a printer and use that and contact John Wells for help if you need any assistance in plotting, what might be within the territorial seas. You also need proof that you were on the ship on those dates and your service records showing that would be helpful. You also need a doctor's diagnosis of one of the enumerated Agent Orange diseases. Those can be found Code of Federal Regulations 38 CFR 3.309. And then John says also having your DD-214, which veterans know to keep. So John has also indicated if there's significant interest, he will consider doing a work session in the New Orleans area to prepare and submit claims, and then military veterans advocacy can also help with appeals. John Wells says that he would need veterans to bring their medical records, any rating decisions, statement of the case, deck logs from their ship, their service records, etc. And if you have any questions and you want to know more about military veterans advocacy or contact John Wells, again, there go to the Facebook page for military veterans advocacy, and you can also send John Wells an email. His email address is johnlawesq@msn.com. So let me repeat that again for those of you that are just grabbing your pen now. You want to reach John Wells, who's the executive director of the Military Veterans Advocacy Organization. His email is johnlawesq@msn.com. John Wells concluded his report by saying, as I quote, "This is not the end of the battle. In fact, it's not even the end of the beginning. We must continue to push forward to treat other victims of Agent Orange. Additionally, we have veterans exposed to radiation, burn pits, and other toxic substances. Military Veterans Advocates estimates there are 4.5 million veterans of military toxic exposure. We must ensure no one is left behind. You can help support Military Veterans Advocacy by liking their Facebook page and going to their website, which is militaryveteransadvocacy.org. And it is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that certainly welcomes your donation to help its work." So we've had John Wells on our show a couple times in the past year. He and the organization are doing great work. Now, Richard, I'm thinking of adding some more information about Burn Pit Film, but before I do that, any thoughts?
No, I'm just thinking about the some of our clients who, over the past number of years, who've been denied VA disability compensation because they were in the Blue Order, and how great this can be if this goes through and it gets signed into law, so that the these veterans can get the coverage. One of the things that I recall, when interviewing our veterans, our clients, about the Blue Water and how they would talk about being on the ship, and the planes would come back from Vietnam, or the helicopters would come back and they'd be covered with Agent Orange, and this would go all over the ships, and the sailors are all being exposed to it, and yet for all these years they were denied the presumption coverage like the other veterans, Vietnam vets who walked, one boot on the ground got them the coverage. So this is a long time coming. I'm glad it's going to happen, and my mind's racing right now because I'm thinking about some of the clients that we've had that lost their fight because they weren't covered.
Yeah. Well, this is certainly, if the bill does pass, as John Wells described, it could happen relatively soon, and then we'll see how the VA handles those cases, because it'll be opening the doors to probably many thousands of cases. And I saw this about 8 years ago when the VA added a few more conditions to the Agent Orange list, and it added ischemic heart disease and a few others at that point, and it really, to a list that was already pretty lengthy, but it seemed to open the floodgates to a lot more claims that the VA was not prepared to handle it. And at that point, the VA was just starting to put out for public use the disability benefit questionnaires because they just were not able to handle the massive flood of compensation and pension exams. So we'll have to see if the VA is... Yes, go ahead.
On that note, because you've been doing this a lot longer than I have, it just seems to me, you know, so much of this, the Agent Orange, and then we saw it again with the Camp Lejeune Instrumenture Act, you know, those are all good bills and good laws, and it's helping a lot of veterans out. But the process to get there, and I forget, it was being described as the compromise. And, you know, it seems like rather than really thinking these things through so that it makes sense on both sides of the line, yes, not everybody should be covered, but at the same time, those who should be covered should be covered. But somewhere in that that whole process of getting the bill into law, compromises are made, and the compromises that are being made are to the detriment of the veteran. Rather than thinking the things through, you know, again, it's called politics, thinking the things through so that the right law gets passed that benefits everybody and that it's not considered abusive. Because, you know, like you just pointed out with the Agent Orange and how a lot of additional diseases got included in there. I know one of the ones I always hear is the prostate cancer. You know, it just seems to me on the whole blue law thing that should have been a no-brainer from the get-go. And it sounds to me like that might have been one of those things where they had to compromise before it got passed, and the blue law people were basically told, no, we're not going to cover you.
It becomes a matter of, though, how far out do you go? What does the science show? Some critics, and I don't mean just critics of the VA, but critics of the way that some of the Agent Orange presumptions were created. And these are from people in Congress that are typically perceived as being, quote, pro-veteran, unquote, is that, you know, the Agent Orange presumption, a long list of disabilities now that has increased over the years, but if you've just spent as short as one day on the ground in Vietnam, and at any point in your life you develop some of these conditions, and some of the conditions are extremely common, and you know, for an older population, you know, the veteran population from Vietnam, you know, most are the youngest are going to be in their late 60s, and most are in their 70s or 80s, and things like ischemic heart
disease.
Prostate cancer is another one for the men.
Yeah.
Type 2 diabetes. Those are the three big ones. And some critics have said, "Whoa, time out! You know, how can we distinguish between?" Those that legitimately could say were exposed to Agent Orange versus they're in the large population of Americans that get those diseases. So that's why it's a bit controversial. And then my point earlier was you continue to expand this, you know, the territorial seas, how far offshore these ships. And I know there's John Wells has done a lot of research, his organization and other veteran groups, to support the Blue Water Navy veterans, as far as you know, getting the science, looking at the scientific evidence to support that these veterans, these Navy ships, had exposure to Agent Orange and increased risk of developing these cancers and other diseases. So, in any event, it's a big issue. We have to applaud John Wells for the work he's done. It's another example of a difference one person can make, or one organization. They've done so much for that. So, in any event, I think let's move on to our final segment of the show, which is an important one. Richard, if you'd like to talk about the coaching and the care program.
We always like to close the show with reminding our veterans and their families about the VA program Coaching into Care. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call, toll-free 1-888-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Again, the VA's Coaching in the Care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I'd like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs also has the Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they didn't get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Today, I was on the phone for 2 hours with a veteran who was in crisis and basically came very close to suicide yesterday. And through the Veterans Crisis Line, he's now getting some help. So they're out there, listeners, and If you do know veterans who need some help, reach out to them. Give them that number, 1-800-273-8255, and press 1. Back to you, David.
Thanks, Richard. Thank you personally for all the great work that you do and being there for veterans, particularly when they're in a crisis, whether they found themselves arrested and they're in jail or whether they're suicidal or in deep financial trouble, whatever the situation has been. I know, Richard, you've always been there. I applaud your work and your dedication. We need more of that, and there are many organizations that do that, and we applaud their work. As far as upcoming guests on our show, next week we have Mike Partain. He's been on our show before. He's going to update us. He's a nationwide expert on the Camp Lejeune toxic water situation. The week after that, we have Adele Trevioso of an organization called Green Veterans. It's a group that helps returning veterans adjust to civilian life, but also to get jobs in companies or organizations that are environmentally friendly, solar power, etc. We also have lined up in upcoming weeks, working out some specific dates, we'll have the Arizona Director of Veteran Services, Wanda Wright, herself a veteran. It'll be our privilege to have her on the show. And we've got Jerry Kerr, who is the Executive Director of a group that provides, you've heard of the Segway machine, to allow people that may be incapacitated or not, that they can have some mobility. He'll be on our show. And we have a few other veteran groups as well. We have Rosie Torres, who is executive director of Burn Pits 360 Veterans Organization. We'll be talking about a subject we've discussed many times in the last year, which is the toxic exposure that Iraq and Afghanistan veterans had from these open burn pits. So, a lot on our upcoming show. We encourage our listeners to tune in every Monday. It's been another quick hour tonight. We'd like to thank our special guest, Brian Meyer, for being on the show. I'd like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom, for the great work he does. And we'd like to invite you, our listeners, to become show guests, sponsors, and advertisers. Help support our work. Richard and I put a lot of time and effort into this show, and it's not even our full-time job. Our contact information is on the show's website, which is bbsradio.com/TheVeteransNewsHour. Again, that's bbsradio.com/TheVeteransNewsHour. You can also find archived podcasts of all our prior shows for your benefit. And we hope you'll stay tuned next week, same time, same station, for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, we hope you have a great week. Good night.
Good night, David. Good job, David.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on VBSRadio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.